Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 20th, 2014. President Kiir issues decrees dismissing presidential advisor Rebecca Nyandeng and others.
My removal is that there's nobody in the world that the Constitution allows to have the status of a government.
And government negotiators continue to boycott the talks in Addis Ababa.
On the issue of withdrawal of foreign forces, these are issues of sovereignty, and the position of the government is that the agreement on the cessation of hostilities, talks of withdrawal of the forces, the allied forces, and the invited forces from the theater of operations.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir issued a decree yesterday dismissing Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior, his longtime advisor on gender issues and human rights, along with seven other legal counsels at the Ministry of Justice. As we hear from Waki Simon Wudu in Juba, the president provided his own explanation for the dismissals.
Presidential Decree No. 41, 2014, which was broadcast on South Sudan Radio, relieved Rebecca Nyandeng from her duties as the presidential advisor on gender issues and human rights. Decree No. 42, 2014, relieved legal counsel Peter Gatkwot Kor, Paul Obank Gore, Abraham Gatkwot Yot, Gach Pok Dak, Del Gadluak Jor, Gwanjen Lual Wechtor, and Simon Ruot Mar of their duties. Presidential spokesman, Attorney Wek Attorney, says the sacking of Nyandeng, the widow of South Sudan's iconic leader, Dr. John Garang Dimabior, was long overdue.
Her removal is that there's nobody in the world that the Constitution allows to have the status of a government and all the benefit that gets you the government and at the same time is working for the downfall of the same government.
Attorney says Nyandeng is the only government official who defected from the government but continues to receive all her benefits, including the salary of presidential advisor. Since the crisis broke out in mid-December, Nyandeng has been critical of the Kiir administration. She told the South Sudan in Focus on Matters Day last month that the president should stop the fighting and negotiate a peaceful solution. She has been calling for an end to the political crisis within the ruling SPLM party since December. Attorney also defended the sacking of the seven legal counsels, pointing out they have not been in office since December.
These are the legal counsels who happen to be, by coincidence, people who can just, you know, simply slip to the side of rebellion. And they have not been here since December 15. There is a likelihood that majority of them might have joined the rebellion in one way or another. And so anybody who is not in the work for the last 8 months, even the law will require that such person to be removed, even if they were not rebellion, they did not rebel.
President Salva Kiir dismissed his entire cabinet in 1 year ago, prompting stiff opposition from senior members of the ruling party. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The South Sudan government delegation at the talks in the Ethiopian capital have boycotted the negotiations for a fifth straight day. The SPLM in opposition blames the government negotiators for throwing obstacles in the way of forming a transitional government as well as a permanent cessation of hostility agreement. Iskander Freo has the details from Addis Ababa.
Ongoing government boycott by the South Sudan government delegation at the talks is casting doubts at any hopes of resolving the crisis in South Sudan very soon. The IGAD-led negotiations produced a cessation of hostilities agreement in January, but differences remain on its implementation. The opposition negotiator Taban Dengai says the matrix for implementing the agreement is an important guideline for achieving a permanent cessation of hostilities agreement.
The matrix is is camping the soldiers, the armies, the two armies in positions, stationing the monitors, and observing the ceasefire violation activities. observing the flow of humanitarian assistance. Mainly it is about the camping soldiers and in their positions and monitoring them.
Guy says the agreement signed last January stipulates the withdrawal of Ugandan and other foreign forces before the signing of the matrix. He added that they will sign the matrix only after the withdrawal of foreign troops from South Sudan.
This party, the SPLM-SPLA, is asking for immediate withdrawal of Ugandan forces and the Northern Sudan rebels, the GEM, the SLA Abdul Wahid, SLA Manawi, and the SPLA North. These forces should leave our country immediately and then we can sign the matrix. They don't want this. They don't want Ugandan forces to withdraw.
The government spokesman Michael Makuilwes says that agreement does not call for the withdrawal of foreign troops from the whole country. He says terms of the agreement are clear and should not be misinterpreted.
On the issue of withdrawal of foreign forces, these are issues of sovereignty, and the position of the government is that the agreement on the cessation of hostilities talks of withdrawal of the forces, the allied forces, and the invited forces from the theater of operations. And by theater of operations, we mean the areas where there is fighting, usually between the two parties.
The government has been accusing the opposition of violating a ceasefire by launching an offensive to recapture areas, which the opposition denies. For VOA News, I am Skander Freo, Addis Ababa.
An international advocacy rights group is calling on both the South Sudan government and the SPLM in opposition to stop using child soldiers in the ongoing conflict in South Sudan. Human Rights Watch says the use of children in conflict is a clear violation of international law. Lucy Pony has that story for VOA from Nairobi.
Human Rights Watch Africa researcher Sky Wheeler says the truth is both parties to the conflict have recruited child soldiers. She says their research indicates the South Sudan Army used child soldiers during recent clashes in Unity State.
In Bentiu, which is the capital of South Sudan's oil-producing Unity State and has been the site of a lot of conflict over the last 9 months, it's changed hands 4 times. And there has been quite a bit of fighting there over the last few days. The government has been in control of the town since May, and since that time has been openly using child soldiers. Many observers have seen them in the town. They've been positioned in defensive positions. They've been at the airstrip. They've been around the military base. Lots and lots, dozens of children. We saw them ourselves. And basically, we received a good number of eyewitness accounts of these kids being used by the government forces on Friday last week whilst defending the town there. And we also spoke to some kids who were involved in the fighting as well.
Wheeler says the Bentiu report will detract from the good the SPLA has done when it demobilized some child soldiers from its ranks.
The big successes in army reform it has seen has been a very serious and very quite successful project at removing children from the army, demobilizing them. And the SPLA has worked closely with partners in the UN agencies to do this over the last few years. So they have a good base to continue this work, and they should be in a good position to make sure that children who are now working with them and have been recruited with the government army are released.
Wheeler says Bentiu officials have acknowledged that their forces included children under the age of 18, but insist that the children came to them for protection and work. The international watchdog group says the opposition forces forcibly recruited hundreds of children from 2 schools in Bentiu and Rubkona in December during the first days of the conflict. Wheeler says the opposition should live up to the commitment they signed in May to protect children during the conflict.
Riek Machar, who is the leader of the opposition forces, signed an agreement with the UN a few months ago, ensuring that he was committed to ending the use of child soldiers and any abuses against children in the conflict by his forces. He also promised to put in place a point person to the UN to work with him, with his opposition forces, to be able to help make sure that kids are not recruited and that those who have are released.
Wheeler is asking regional and international actors to help bring to an end the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan by pressuring both warring parties to stop fighting.
We are calling on both sides to end these patterns of abuse, killings of civilians, pillage of civilian property, the use of child soldiers. These are patterns that must, that should end. And, you know, the people who are in charge of these forces can do that. And the region, as well as the wider international community, Kenya, Ethiopia, Sudan, Uganda, these neighbors who are also, as you know, running the peace talks in Addis Ababa, they should also use all their leverage they can to call on both sides to end this horrific pattern of abuse.
The French humanitarian aid agency Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, reported that most of the more than 200 people who have died in their hospital in Bentiu since May were children. Most have died from diseases related to the appalling conditions that now exist due to the fighting. According to international laws of war, the recruitment or use of children under the age of 15 by parties to a conflict constitute a war crime. 156 countries have ratified an international treaty that prohibits the use of children under the age of 18 by either government forces or non-state armed groups in fighting. South Sudan in Focus made several attempts to contact South Sudan's army spokesman for this report, but he was unavailable for comment. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
Bakita News editor Ochan David Nicholas was released yesterday by South Sudan's National Security Service, although Bakita station, managed by the Catholic Diocese of Juba, remains closed. The station has been ordered by the government not to air political programs. Bakita Radio's management says it is willing to review the station's programs, but insists it will be challenging to avoid airing political stories in a country like South Sudan. Philip Aleu reports for VOA from Juba.
The director of Bakita Radio, Albino Tokwaro, says most of Bakita's radio programming is about religious and health issues, but its listeners are also very interested in politics, and it will be hard to completely stop airing programs without some sort of political angle.
What is politics? The whole human being is political. The whole human being, whether you are in a church or you are not in a church, you are a political being.
Radio Bakita is owned by the Catholic Church in South Sudan. One of its shows is the popular morning call-in show entitled Wake Up Juba, where listeners interact with guests in the studio who often happen to be politicians. Michael Thorne, the former host of the Wake Up Juba, says he was threatened twice after he dedicated 1.5 hours of a show in December 2012 to the slaying in Juba of political commentator Isaiah Abraham, who was gunned down by a known gunman. His killers has never been identified.
I asked the public on wake-up call the relationship of the police service with the public. Do the public respect police? Do they help the police to give them information that would help them when they are providing security? Do the police respect the people? And the police leadership was not happy. The police came within looking for me. I cannot conclude they had wanted to come and arrest me, but they were furious to say, why would Wake Up Juba discuss about the institution of police without contacting them?
Son says he offered the police the right to reply on the show. He thinks that explains why he was not arrested, but he also says,
I felt like I knew I was being supervised somewhere that I don't know, and I had to be careful on what goes on air. Yes, it has to be what is truth, and it has to be what is in the public interest, so that I can only defend myself in the court of law.
Son says the arrest of journalists and the closure of radio stations is an indication that the press is operating in a hostile environment. But he urged journalists to continue to abide by the rules of their profession and reports impartially, objectively, accurately, and fairly.
But I think the best way journalists should do is not to feel threatened and leave their job. Journalists should stick to their work, the principle of journalism, the impartiality, the objectivity, accuracy, and fairness. They should continue being the bridge between the people and the government.
Presidential spokesman Atanyueka Ateny told South Sudan in Focus on Monday that the story that led to the closure of Bakita Radio and the detention of four staff members, including news editor David Ochen, breached national security because it blamed government forces for triggering fresh fighting in Jonglei and Unity States by attacking rebels' position. Three of the Bakita staff members were only held for a few hours, but Ochen remained in detention until yesterday. Bakita Radio is still off the air today, The keys to the station are reportedly still in the hands of the national security officials. Tokwaro says future news broadcasts will be carefully scrutinized by editors to avoid the possibility of being perceived as a threat to national security. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
The U.S. State Department has criticized the detainment of the news editor at Bakito Radio. Here is State Department spokesperson Mary Huff.
We are concerned that this Juba-based radio station, which is run by the Catholic Church, was shut down on Saturday. Me and the news editor was detained. We are monitoring the situation closely. I have publicly made clear our concern about the case, as I just did, and reiterated our long concern about the abridgment of the freedom of expression. I think that's the theme of the day here today, including for members of the press, and urge the government of South Sudan to fully adhere to its constitutional guarantees and international obligations.
Mary Huff is the U.S. State Department spokesperson. She was speaking at a briefing here in Washington.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Sadly, sexual attacks on women occur in many circumstances in many communities, and the victims are not at fault. Sexual violence is a serious crime. Individuals that have been attacked should seek immediate medical attention. In addition to pregnancy, their psychological dangers and the risk of sexually transmitted diseases such as HIV. That's why victims should seek medical help immediately. Physical and psychological trauma must both be treated quickly. It's also important that people do not blame the victims. Hopefully, with family and community support, the healing can begin.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan Red Cross Society organizes social activities for children traumatized by the crisis. That story is coming up next.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on the events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That is South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is wealth an important factor when making marriage decisions?
Not really, because that locks out poor people who don't have money. So it's not a factor.
Yeah, I think wealth is important for a person to make decision in marriage. Because when you have wealth, you can provide for your family. You can do anything, you educate your children, everything is okay when you are wealthy in a family.
Yes, I think it is. You see, when you are wealthy or when you have money, you are better off protecting your family. Mm-hmm. You are in a better position to protect your family, to provide what they need and such.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus, still on the issues of children. South Sudan Red Cross Society is beginning a child protection program to provide psychological support to Jonglei State school children affected by the political crisis in South Sudan. As Jacob Achiek reports from Bor, school authorities say the program will create what they call a child-friendly space.
The program was launched last week at Bor Public Primary School. David Gaider, the director of Red Cross Society in Jonglei State, says his organization is targeting 300 children aged 18 at a school in Jonglei, Lake and Central Equatorial State.
We are launching the unit of psychosocial support in Bor Public School. The most important of this program is to help the children who are being traumatized and as opposed to the resolution during the conflict, especially the recent conflicts.
Dare say the program activities include game, drama, music, art, and sport. Mayan Manyang Mach, deputy head teacher of Bor Public Primary School, says the program will change some bad habit among school children.
This program, the Child Friendly Space, is a productive one that can really change the mind of the pupil. So I'm very sure it will have impacts on the learners because, you know, most of the learners were affected during a conflict and You know, this can change their behaviors, and through this initiative, I'm very sure it will have impact on them so that they can really adjust to a normal.
Aler Ngong is a primary five pupil at Bor Public Primary School. He says he is too excited to see new extracurriculum facilities, which he hopes will keep students busy.
The reason why we are happy is because they have brought us these balls so that we can play. We don't have to go anywhere. The Red Cross staff called us and they said, we have brought you these things so that you can play in our school and you don't have to go into town, because those who go into town end up doing criminal activities.
Nyel Chol, who had her three children study at Bor Public Primary School and is also happy with the new initiative introduced by the South Sudan Red Cross Society. She said the programs will help children develop new skills and talents.
They went to school and came back and put down the books, and we would just hang out with friends. Everyone who goes to school says, it's good because my child, you will learn.
Bor Public Primary Schools has more than 400 pupils, half of last year enrollments. Last month, South Sudan Red Cross Society launched a similar project in Juba, and there are plans to extend the initiative to camp for the internal displaced person in Awerel County of Lake State. The psychological support program is funded by Swiss Red Cross. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
And there is more good news on the education front. After being closed for 8 months due to the fighting, the John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology in Bor reopened this week. Some of the students say they were forced to flee thousands of kilometers away when the violence erupted. University authorities say the facilities were all but destroyed. Jacob Achek talked to some of the returning students and officials and has this report from Bor.
University officials say the campus was one of the hardest hit areas of Jonglei State during the heat of the fighting. When fighting erupted in Bor on December 18, the dormitories were destroyed while other structures were heavily damaged. Tall grasses covered the campus after being shattered for 8 months. School officials, along with the Red Army Foundation, have since deployed teams to cut the grass and tie up the campus ground. Acting Vice Chancellor David Malwaro Ward said 13 cars, dozens of computers, and most documents, including the students' test results, were vanished. He says getting back to normal wouldn't be easy.
You have seen the university destroyed, some facilities removed, others are ransacked, some buildings are ransacked. So one of the key challenges that we have now that the administration is facing is rehabilitation of the university, buying the equipment, putting the university back to its normal shape.
And Ward says during the fighting, a majority of university professors, most of whom stayed from neighboring counties, left the country for their own safety and did not return. Ward said the university needs roughly 15 million South Sudanese pounds to replace destroyed equipment and furnishes and to get up and running again. Bolmeri Awol, a business management student, says when the fighting broke out, terrible things happened in Bor.
In that crisis, there are so many people who were killed. Many people were dead because of the disease. So many children were also drowned in the river. So we ran out up to the riverside, up to Juba. So from there, the school was not even continued until we came back now.
Acting Vice Chancellor David Malwal Ward says three university students were killed during the fighting. Alfred Akolde Akish, an agriculture student at the university, says he had to run for his life in December.
We went to Gwalior. Then from Gwalior, I went to our county, Yerulis County. Then I stayed there for almost 8 months from now. Without school, we have been in war. And that war is totally worse. Some of us are now in Juba. They are not coming here because our dorm is distracted by rebels and all our properties are taken away. Now we are suffering.
Madul Majang Anyest, a business administration student, says, like many others, he lost all of his textbook and other school material during the violence.
We lost everything, even some of our documents, the handout for reading, we did not get. So we are now resuming. We are just looking for where to get the handout from the teachers. The studies are not going well, so it has just really affect us.
More than 400 students attended the university after the violence erupted. University authorities said about half of those students will take their end-of-semester examination in Juba, where conditions are more secure. Officials said they will soon hold a fundraising to help rebuild the school, which is primarily funded by South Sudan government. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Israel and the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip carried out dozens of attacks on each other today, with one Israeli airstrike killing the wife and infant son of the Hamas military leader in Gaza. Israel said it hit more than 90 targets in the Palestinian enclave along the Mediterranean, one of which struck the house of Hamas military commander Mohammed Deif. Hamas said he is still alive, but the raid killed his 27-year-old wife and 7-month-old son. Several thousand mourners joined a funeral procession for them and shouted demands for revenge. The Obama administration says it is trying to confirm the authenticity of a video that purports to show the killing of an American photojournalist by Islamic State militants. The militant group Islamic State today released the video it claims shows the beheading of James Wright Foley as a message to the United States to stop intervening in Iraq. The video on YouTube was entitled A Message to America from the Islamic State. It identified a man on his knees as Foley and showed his beheading. And finally, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder plans to be in the central U.S. town of Ferguson, Missouri today, the site of violent protests following the shooting death of an unarmed black teenager by a white police officer. Holder is due to meet with community leaders, FBI investigators, and federal civil rights officials to discuss the shooting death of 18-year-old Michael Brown on August 9th. Holder has promised the people of Ferguson a full, fair, and independent investigation into the shooting of Mr. Brown. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Exodus by Bob Marley and the Wailers. We have been listening to Bob Marley and the Wailers with that song, Exodus. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and cars. Please join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.